Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I have the honor of presenting to you Marisol Solotti Erlacher. Marisol is a trauma expert, resilience consultant, and licensed psychotherapist with over 20 years of experience helping organizations build cultures where both people and performance thrive. She hosts the award-nominated podcast, Resilience and Resistance, featuring successful Black, Indigenous, and women of color who have overcome trauma to become resilient leaders. Named one of Colorado's top 25 most powerful women in business, Marisol currently specializes in helping organizations create psychologically safe workplaces that drive engagement and results. Her culturally responsive approach has made her a sought-after speaker and consultant for nonprofits, corporations, and public service organizations across the country. Welcome, Marisol.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Marie.
I'm looking forward to our interview today. Please tell the audience a little bit about who you are, where you were born. Did you have a family? Did you have siblings?
Yeah. So I was actually born and raised in Carpentersville, Illinois, which is a northwest suburb of Chicago. So probably about an hour to 45 minutes northwest of the city. And my parents were not born and raised in Illinois. My dad is an immigrant from Colombia, South America, and ended up in Carpentersville, Illinois when he was about 14 years old. And similarly, my mother is actually from a border town in Texas called Mission, Texas. And she arrived to the same suburb around the same age. And they met each other. And a couple of years later, I was born. So they were both teenagers when I arrived. And it led to, obviously, a very interesting growing up. But part of that allowed me to be in contact with my paternal grandmother a lot. And she used to love to joke that she helped raise me, which was true. And she didn't speak English. She only spoke Spanish in our household. And so I grew up speaking Spanish. And I think my very first preschool was a bilingual preschool until I went into a fully integrated classroom. And, you know, it was also a very interesting childhood because I had two different cultures. My mom identifies as Mexican American, and obviously my dad is Colombian. And although lots of different intersections, two very different ways of understanding my own identity.
Mm-hmm. And then with your grandmother,
yeah,
that was in that third way. So you really had the chance to build bridges across cultures from a young age,
yeah,
even.
Oh, for sure.
And what about now? Do you have a family now?
I do. So I have been married for 25 years, which is also a real different journey. I was married when I was 22 years old. My husband was 21 years old. We're very young. And we have one biological son, and he is 16 years old. And so we're a small little family. And part of that has to do with our own personal journey. My husband was diagnosed with cancer when he was 32 years old. And this was 2 years after we had our son, and which changed our plans in terms of expanding our family. And so we're a small little tight-knit family of three.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up, you probably had some things happen that were pleasant, some unpleasant, and some things that are just neutral, mm-hmm, but you remember them anyway. So mm-hmm, can you share one or two incidents from your childhood that you think formed you?
Yeah. Gosh, there are so many. I really struggled with this question because I think there were so many different formative experiences. You know, I think growing up with parents who were young absolutely shaped how I function in the world. So I think, you know, we talk about having to grow up together in many ways. And part of growing up together, and I think part of how I came into the world, made me an extremely parentified, over-responsible child, and which translated to being a parentified, over-responsible adult. And so it absolutely shaped who I was in the world and how they related to me and how we understood each other. And I think they created a lot of experiences where I definitely felt carefree and felt like a child. And there were a lot of ways that I felt like I was always a little adult. So I think having teenage parents definitely formed me in that way. I think the other thing that I would say is part of having that experience of young parents is that they didn't know how to have a relationship. And I saw the experience of an intergenerational trauma play out in my family, not just in my little family, but my extended family. And so I think, you know, I grew up with a lot of traumatized adults who played out their trauma in different ways. And part of that was a lot of interpersonal violence, just because they didn't know how to have relationships. And that was what they were modeled. And also growing up in an alcoholic family. So that was another way that they coped with their trauma. So I think those experiences fundamentally shaped who I am today.
Oh, for sure. But you have emerged whole and resilient and capable. How did you move through that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I thought about this a lot too. And I think that this is part of what I talk about a lot is a lot of how I funneled my distress was to figure out a path forward. How do I achieve? How do I become successful? How do I work hard in order to get out of my circumstances? And so I think a lot of whatever I saw as like, wait, that's not right. And I don't want to redo that. I funneled into trying to be high achieving and figure out how I can work harder in order to get out of my circumstances. So I think that's just part of my personality and how I responded to the trauma that I experienced. I think the other thing is I've been in therapy for a really long time. And, you know, I think culturally, therapy was not a thing for me growing up. It was just something that was not part of the cultural norm of our family. And when I discovered there's actually a way that you can get help and this is the path to do it, I started therapy when I was 18 years old and I haven't stopped since. And so I think just a very significant dedication to my own healing and my own personal growth.
Mm-hmm. When people engage with their own healing, they become a conduit for healing in the family too.
Yeah, I believe that strongly.
Mm-hmm. So what about as a young adult or an adolescent? Is there something that stands out for you as a marking moment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple of things. So I am a survivor of sexual assault very early in my adolescence. I was 11 years old. And this stands out significantly because I think it comes back to this idea of resilience. I ended up being in like an advanced English class and they gave us a list of authors that we should read or books we should read. And one of the first authors on that list was Maya Angelou, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. So I just methodically went through that list and that was the first book. And I remember reading that book and thinking, wait a second, if she went through something similar and she was able to overcome it, that means that I can too, that I'm going to get out of the other side and I could actually be successful. So I think that was a powerful moment for me to understand that words matter, that stories matter, that narratives matter, and they have a transformative effect. And so I think that was definitely a significant moment in my adolescence.
Yeah. And knowing that somebody else can be like a model for you or has already started to cut the path towards healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure that Maya Angelou has affected so many people's healing journeys and career journeys just because of the way she writes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I can't even imagine the impact that she's had on this world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So from these groups that you were born into, you've already spoken about it in terms of the negative effects, but what about culturally? Were there some things that came out sort of through ethnicity or nationality, religion, region that influenced you and that you think you're still holding within yourself now as part of who you are?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think fundamentally, I feel like my cultural identity has shaped so much of who I am. It's feels like the core of who I am. I think that although, again, you know, there were tricky dynamics in my family, I think the thing that I learned was how important the model of family is. And I think I've translated that into my life as not just biological family, but the family that you adopt, the family that comes around you at different stages of life and become your chosen family. So I think that is something that I've internalized so strongly and what it means to be loyal and committed to those people in your life that love you and are there for you. I also talk a lot about, obviously, in my work, I'm always thinking and talking about the sustainability of work and trying to alleviate chronic stress. So I've had to battle with the way that I've internalized this. But, you know, my family, both my parents and I think my extended family, they're such hard workers, you know, and I think that's part of the immigrant mentality. And I think that that carries on in generations. And I think it's such a positive thing because so much of my work is based in how I want to support the people I love. And I think that just fundamentally came from my family and my culture of origin. And so I think those things have shaped me strongly. And I was asking a friend about this question. And one of the things that they shared with me was, there's also this way that we have fun, that like celebrating the joys of life. And even in spite of how hard things are, I think when I first went to Colombia when I was 16 years old, even though this was part of my family culture, but just how joy and celebration is so embedded into every part of culture in spite of how difficult things are.
Like Latino culture? Yeah.
Yeah, with Latino culture. And I think even in Colombian culture, it's such a part of who we are, is like we celebrate no matter what. And we're always looking for points of joy and where joy is in our lives. And I think that has been such a significant part of my resilience. You know, I think that working with an organization today, we're talking about hope and joy in spite of working with traumatized individuals. And I really think that's why I've been able to do the work that I've done for as long as I've done it, is because I have this capacity to be hopeful and to also see the joys of life.
You know, I teach an immigrant entrepreneurship class every year with a nonprofit organization. And I have noticed that consistently the people that come in from Mexican or Colombian or Venezuela and some of the other Latin American countries, almost always their first business choice is something that's going to have fun. It's going to bring fun. So teaching salsa dancing, or, you know, starting a salsa dance studio, or creating an event, planning to show other people how much fun you can have when you're in the presence of people who speak Spanish and know how to party. It's come up so frequently.
It's so true.
So when you say that, it just reminds me of those other, it doesn't mean they stayed with those initial business ideas, but it was kind of a go-to.
Yeah. I think that's like one of the things that I value so much about our culture, is we can always have fun. It doesn't matter how tragic our circumstances are.
That's how the nervous system reestablishes itself. Have to have some joy. So what about groups that you chose to belong to, because you're certainly part of psychotherapy and you would be part of groups of people that have to deal with trauma and many other things too. I mean, you must have joined other groups and you got married and you have kids and all of those things. And then maybe you've learned other languages besides Spanish. I don't know. So have you traveled and lived in other countries? Any of those things might have affected your sense of culture and leadership as you got older. Can you think of any that apply to you now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sadly, I don't speak any other languages. I wish I did. My husband has an incredible ability to speak other languages and explore the languages. I was not. Thank goodness I actually grew up speaking Spanish, because I don't think I would be able to speak a language if I didn't. My brain is just not built that way for some reason. But what I will say is that I think one of the things that led me to Denver was my own spiritual journey, which is probably a much longer discussion. But I grew up Catholic and I ended up moving toward evangelicalism in my teenage years. And I think part of that was probably a response to my own trauma and wanting to find a space where I felt belonging in a different way. And that it felt like I could find these answers that felt very secure and very certain. And so through that, I ended up going to seminary, which brought me to Denver, Colorado. And I've moved away from evangelicalism, and that part of my spiritual journey, I think that understanding of your own spiritual path and what that means to you as an individual is very important. But I'm on a different path now. So I think that part of belonging led me to be here in this part of the United States, which I think has been transformative to me. While I was at seminary, I ended up being part of a program called the Circle of Latina Leadership, which was a group specifically focused on training up young Latina leaders. And it was through that training program that I met a circle of women that all had shared identities. And we've been together as part of a book club for the past 10 years.
Wow.
And I think just through different avenues, and I think just fundamentally, which is part of the community of Denver, is very much about entrepreneurship, having this rugged way around creating things that are new. I've met a lot of incredible women who are just strong leaders in the community, who are passionate about service, and who are also just wickedly smart and very competent. And so I have several circles of women that share all of those different characteristics. And I just feel very lucky to have all of those communities of women around me. So I feel like my identity, the work that I do, and I think being in Denver, which is a community that I really love, I feel like I've been embraced by so many amazing women.
That's lovely. Many people on the podcast speak about their spiritual journey, their religious journey, their spiritual journey, some both of them together.
Yeah.
I mean, we're spiritual beings, so it's going to come up.
Yeah.
And especially if you're working with people's trauma, there is that whole sense of who am I? Why am I here? And is there anything greater than me? And how should mm-hmm. I be contributing? What's my purpose in life? That comes mm-hmm. up a lot when you're working with people that are trying to rethink their lives. And so I would be surprised if you hadn't mentioned it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're all on a spiritual path.
Yeah. So what's something you've learned from that?
I think that what I've learned actually was having a conversation with a friend of mine who is very, very dedicated to her meditation practice. And she's does many like week-long silent retreats over the course of the year. And so she was headed off to a silent retreat and we were talking about our spiritual journeys. And I think for me, I've found this freedom, I think in the past year, to really explore what it means for me individually. And what I've come to understand is that I think every path leads in the same direction most of the time. So I think I've just experienced a lot of freedom around what that means for me and to really tap into my deep knowing of myself and then what that means to be me in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've just really, especially in the past year, year and a half, have really grown to understand who I am in the world and what my purpose is. And I feel very confident about that.
Oh, that's really lovely. So next question's about personality, the part you're born with, temperament. And then mm-hmm. of course, it's very much affected by your social context, sometimes hard to separate from that. But then with your personality, you have opportunities that you take or don't take. You have obstacles that you overcome or don't overcome. And all of that helps to shape your personality ongoing because it's fluid, just like culture is fluid. So
right.
What would you say you started with temperament-wise and where are you now personality-wise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a great question. And I reflected on this a lot. I think that if my parents were to describe my temperament as a child, I think they would say I was very inward focused and very quiet and not very extroverted at all, very introverted child. And that I would spend a lot of time just in my own world, either playing. And I think part of that is because I was an only child for 7 years, or I was just very much about coloring or drawing or just doing very solitary activities. Again, I think part of it was how being in a young family by myself for a long time and trying to figure out their very complex world, I think definitely shaped my personality. And I always say that, you know, I'm the oldest daughter in a Latinx family. Again, like I said, parentified, over-responsible. So I think I just moved right into the perfect profession where people come to me to help deal with their difficult issues and to ask for my insight or what they should do. So I think all of that, I think specifically shaped my personality. And I think what I love about that is that I think that I have this very reflective, very soulful, very introspective part of myself that I think I was just born with. And I think, again, my family and who I am in my family definitely shaped my ability to be a leader and to take, I think, responsibility for lots of different things and feel confident in that and to kind of fumble through and find my way. And so I think, yeah, definitely, I think being the oldest daughter in my family has definitely shaped my personality.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice way of explaining your journey through all of that and ending up in the profession that you're in right now.
It's so true. Yeah.
Can you recall a time when you became aware that what you were experiencing in your life was not what everybody else was experiencing? You had a moment of cultural dissonance.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever had that experience specifically. I think I've had a couple of different experiences where I realized my family and my experience were very different. I remember in my neighborhood, we definitely had a very like racially and ethnically diverse community. And I remember my best friend, who was the across the cul-de-sac neighbor, was a Korean adoptee. And we had lots of different kids who were on the block and on the cul-de-sac. And I remember having a moment when I realized, oh, not every family speaks Spanish. And my grandmother doesn't speak English, and there's something different about that. And I was probably very young. I was probably a kindergarten or first grade when I realized, like, oh, that's different.
That's when I had my first known memory that I can recall. Because I had a friend at school who was Italian, and her family owned a pasta manufacturing plant. And she had her birthday party there. And I'd never had Italian cheese. I'd never had pizza. And we did the tour of the plant, and I was okay with that. And then we walked into the kitchen, and the smell of the pizza cooking was just so unfamiliar to me. It wasn't pleasant or unpleasant. It was just a shock. And I just ran out of that house and ran all the way home. And I said to my parents, I don't know where I was.
Oh, my gosh. I love that story.
I don't remember how they reacted. I just remember how distressed I was.
It's so distressing to realize difference, even if we don't even understand it. It's like, oh, wait, I'm different. And I have to make sense of that in the world.
Tell me a little bit about when you're working with people, what brings out the best in you when somebody is working with you? What kinds of conditions bring out the best in you so you can truly do your best work and be your best self?
Mm-hmm. I think absolutely just being able to show up authentically. I think that's been fundamentally the thing that I've worked hardest at in the therapy relationship, is to show up as myself. And I think that can be really difficult with the power dynamic that's just implicit to a therapy relationship. I think it's very complicated in terms of how you set boundaries and what that means and how people want different things from you as a therapist and have different expectations. But I think I always thrive when I can show up as myself. And I think part of that is just infusing humor into everything that I do. One of my suite mates, we would share an office, and sometimes she would be there before I ended a session or vice versa. She said, you know, the thing that I always take away from you is that every time you're in a session, there's always laughter. She's like, that's so unique for a trauma therapist. And so I think when I can just be who I am in the world, in the work that I do, I feel like that is always when I'm at my best.
Well, laughter is a release for the nervous system, too.
Yeah.
So if people are doing trauma therapy and there's no laughter, then the nervous system is not releasing.
I agree. And who wants to do therapy if you can't laugh with your therapist?
Well, exactly. So here's your soapbox moment. What would you like to promote and let people know about?
Oh, thank you. I think essentially the work that I do. So a lot of the work that I do is working with organizations and companies around building resilient teams and mitigating chronic stress. So I think that's the work that I continue to build upon and would love people to learn about at my website, which I'm sure you'll probably link to this episode.
Yes, it's MarisolErlacher.com/podcast. And people should look in the show notes so that they can see the spelling of it all. But it'll be there and they can definitely get in touch with you that way.
Yeah. And I think also what I would just like to say is that I've pretty much ended my work as a clinician and doing clinical work in the world. But I want people to know that trauma is not terminal, that you can always heal and you can grow from whatever experiences that you have. And that's, I think, a really important message for people to hear.
Yes, that's a wonderful way to end. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think that's it. I'm just really grateful to be on here with you. It was such a fun conversation to have.
Well, thank you so much for being here on the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And I'm sure listeners will very much enjoy listening to the interview.
Thank you.
Although Marisol was born into a complex family situation with a lot of intergenerational trauma, she managed to move forward in her life by taking charge of her own personal healing journey and then extending that grace to others. As a psychotherapist, she has helped others heal their emotional wounds and then used the insights gained from 20 years of experience to become a resilience consultant. I enjoyed her natural spontaneity and easygoing manner. Marisol's readiness to explore and enjoy concepts throughout the interview was a delight. Here are some takeaways from her interview for me. 1, when you face difficulties in your young life, look to people who have overcome them, as Marisol did by reading Maya Angelou. 2, you are more than your traumas. Build strengths from overcoming obstacles and use them in the service of others. 3, if you feel you're missing some fun and laughter in your life, befriend someone from the Latino culture and you will upgrade your joy. Please share this episode with someone you think could benefit. And as always, take a few moments to go to our website, shiftworkplace.com/podcast and look for the red box that says, "We would love to hear from you," to leave a review. If you would like to work with me for leadership skill development or coaching to move from job distress to career success, contact me at marie@shiftworkplace.com to set up a time and discuss your situation. Thank you for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day.